There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh! A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cavs have gone 1-2 since we last recorded, with some tough games over the weekend. Both the score against Toronto and the injury report against the Pelicans was a little tough to take. If you guys didn't spend that much time focusing on the Cavs over the weekend for that reason, we got you covered. We got all the takes. We got all the analysis you need. And there's actually a ton to talk about that I'm really excited to talk about. And with me today to discuss all of that good stuff is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You would think, coming off two L's, we'd be pretty bummed out, especially the way the Toronto game started. But hey, you know what? They fought their way back to a competitive game, and Toronto somehow got it to 12 points, which felt near impossible. and then put together a really, really spirited outing with the MASH squad against New Orleans. So I feel about as good as I can feel coming off two straight L's.
Well, what's really helping me is the fact that what I like more than anything, especially when we're at this stage of the team building, is being right. And this weekend was a great example of what we were talking about on the last podcast, which is no matter who's really available, that we're facing a lot of teams that want to make the playoffs. You look at the remaining schedule and the only games they have left, they have two games against Orlando and Detroit, that those teams are probably not going to be prioritizing making the play-in. I think it's safe to say that they're focused on the lottery. But outside of that, no matter who's available, they are going to be playing teams that are highly motivated and really, really instructive games, in my opinion. And what you saw over the weekend, I think, was the exact same situation played out in reverse, where against the Raptors, the Cavs looked at the injury report. They had won two games in a row, and they thought, you know what? I could just walk into this game. We can get a win. They're missing their best players. And not only did they play a focused team, they happened to play a team that just got unbelievably hot. They don't shoot that well in shoot around. They just hit absolutely everything. And then the reverse happened the following night. The Pelicans looked at the Cavs saying, Garland, Sexton, Allen, Nance, these guys are all out. And they came out with a lackluster effort. And we saw the exact reverse. Now, talent won out in the end in that matchup. But I think it's a really, really great example of the Cavs still needing to go through some of these growing pains. They've had these stretches this season where they've started to feel themselves, and it's kind of bit them in the butt when that does occur.
Yeah, I mean, they just weren't sharp against Toronto at all. You know, it was funny. I think a few times you were like, well, you know, they're making everything. I'm like, well, when you only defend one out of 12 possessions, you tend to hit a rhythm. And I think the Cavs would tell you. I mean, Colin Sexton said it after the game. He said it was an embarrassing first half, but you know, we've talked about this all season, and I continue to feel the need to hammer it, which is this is a season where the highs are going to be really high and the lows are going to be hilariously low. And against Toronto, they were hilariously low in the first half. But what matters, what was good to me at least, was the fact that we've seen a lot of games where this team's been punched in the mouth and they're just not able to find it. And that wasn't that game. They actually fought their way into a competitive, fourth quarter. And you say down 12 in the fourth, that's not that competitive. But, you know, that's why you watch the games. And, you know, we saw this team actually fight their way to some competence, which is really important. I do feel like that kind of carried over into the New Orleans game, even though they were without their backcourt.
Yeah, and this ties into what I was talking about on the last episode, where they need to keep their focus in these games, because this is something that you can't really replicate. All hopes are next season this is going to be a playoff team. That's my personal hope. That was the goal for this season, but as we talked about before the season started, that might have been a little unrealistic just how young this team is. But what you're having right now against all these teams that are fighting for that play-in spot is teams that are really motivated, that are trying harder than they would in other regular season matchups. And for the Cavs, this is probably going to be the situation they're in next year. Obviously, you hope that they're going to be a higher seed, but I don't think this play-in tournament is going anywhere. I think it's been successful. When you listen to the national guys, they seem to feel like this is going to be something that's around. The Cavs need to learn from these experiences. They need to learn, okay, just because a team is a little out of it or they're missing guys, we still need to bring that effort. We aren't the LeBron Cavs or another contender that can just turn it on in the fourth. They need to really give that consistent effort level on a night-to-night basis, and that kind of consistency is what gets you into the playoffs. That's why I really value this stretch and why I've advocated for taking it seriously versus resting Garland, Sexton, and those guys just for a maybe 2% lottery increase. So to me, that's not as valuable as the growth that is possible here over this stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And, you know, we soapboxed at the end of the last pod, and I feel like we're soapboxing now. Like, this is the time. This is the home stretch.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that we're looking to see get healthy. Perhaps by Wednesday, we cross our fingers. Seems like Larry seems pretty confident he'll be back soon. If you check his Twitter account, Jarrett has missed, you know, a good amount of games for a concussion. I'm hoping that he's feeling better. And, you know, this was what we've been waiting for all year. And to pull the rug out and kind of bail, I think would be just such a disappointment as a Cavs fan. I want to see what this core looks like together because, you know, even no matter who they add next season, this just knowing how basketball works, just knowing how young players take a while to start contributing, this is actually the reason the Cavs will be good or bad next season. This group right here.
Agreed.
You know, even if they get Cade, like Cade will raise their ceiling immensely, but by all reports, he's the kind of player who is, you know, he's not, he's number one in the class, but he's not like a Zion level prospect where your floor just flies up too. And by the way, their floor hasn't gone up that high either in New Orleans. though no one wants to talk about that, even though I think we all agree that Zion is a super duper star in the making. But yeah, so like it's really important and instructive. We missed a third of a year of a season, half a season worth of eval for this core. And I don't think they should waste it lightly. So I'm really, really excited for this next stretch. And obviously, I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping everyone kind of gets back to 100% all at once for once, which has not happened this entire season.
Right. And when you're in these competitive games, you learn a lot of what works and what doesn't work. Like, I thought it was really interesting against the Pelicans that JB went with Dean Wade starting at the small forward. Now, when I first saw the report, I thought, okay, well, why isn't Torian Prince or another forward starting? Because we do have those guys active. We do have them available. And a few things that jumped out right away was, okay, they're forming a wall when Zion's trying to take it on into the interior. And that was an effective strategy. It kind of threw New Orleans off. They weren't letting him get those easy buckets when they did have those three bigs out there. The other thing that's...
Yeah, not a lot of easy buckets for Zion in that one.
Yeah, well, in that little stretch, there was adjustments made, but I'm talking about that initial burst, what you want to get with the starting lineup. There were certainly easy buckets to be had for him as the game progressed. But the other thing that I think you learn from that experience, and one of the things that kind of clicked mid-game for me, was, okay, well, this team's about to get healthy. Larry Nance is saying, oh, I'm on my way back, or I'm coming back soon, according to his Twitter account, as you mentioned. Jared Allen's probably back. Hartenstein's playing really well, and you're not going to drop him out of the rotation. So getting a look at Dean Wade starting at the three or playing some minutes at the three is probably a creative way that you can get him touches, that you can keep him involved in the rotation. Maybe you do that with Larry Nance, where on one end, they're playing, or Nance is probably playing the four defensively, but he may play the three offensively, or you kind of change it up with those positions. But that's the type of thing that they might have to do to keep Dean Wade in this rotation. And that's important because Dean Wade is playing really well on both ends of the floor, obviously going for a career high against the Pelicans. But I thought it was a really creative thing, and it seemed to have paid off.
Yeah, I do think that's less about, I don't know, maybe I'm reading between the lines too much, but I do think they like Prince coming off the bench because he does add a little shot creation juice for them that is just not there with their second units, especially when, you know, when they're as limited as they are with who's on the floor. But yeah, I mean, I love Dean Wade on this team. I think, you know, he obviously had an amazing game against New Orleans. Just if you're watching the live stream, just stroking threes on these dudes. Zion, by the way, just an absolutely terrible three-point defender. It is unconscionable how bad he is. He's just like flat-footed for no reason. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely earned minutes. And, you know, I don't know if JB's always going to be able to give it to him. And I think on the last pod, I don't even remember. I'm starting to blend takes together. But, you know, JB's mostly been happy to run an 8-man rotation, sometimes 9 with Lamar Stevens, if the team isn't trying hard enough, frankly, which is when I think he pulls the Lamar lever. You know, and obviously Jetty played some minutes too last night, though I think that was much more of a byproduct of, you know, the health of the team.
Before we move on from Jetty, I do think it's worth noting he did have some frustrating turnovers and it kind of fell apart a little bit in the second half, but I thought that was one of his better games, and he kind of played well in that backup point guard role.
Yeah, I don't know what people want from Jetty. Like, I saw, like, goddamn Jetty. I saw so many complaints about him. And I was like, what do you want from the new?
I really think that's what it comes down to, is we've just seen so much of Jetty that I think that there's some impatience there.
Yeah, I thought he had a nice game. I mean, just a super good N1 in the second quarter that we just saw on the stream. You know, really good pick and roll playmaking. Found Hartenstein for a couple easy buckets. Like, yeah, he's got limitations, and sure, he's going to kind of run up against a wall at some point once the team locks in, but I thought he played about as well as you could have expected him to last night. I thought that was ridiculous to complain about him. But, you know, right now it's, you know, I think JB, if he has his druthers with the team's health, what it was against Toronto, is to play the starting five with Wade and Love starting. Then, you know, Torian Prince, Dally, and Hartenstein off the bench. That's 8 guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to get a backup 4 and they're starting 5 back. So you think, okay, 10-man rotation, that seems normal. But he does have a problem here. And this JB has a problem here in the sense that, you know, you're going to have to play 5 bigs if you do this.
Right. Yeah, you really have to.
And it's really hard to play 5 bigs in the modern NBA. Now, I do think there is a degree of, you just play your best guys if you're a team like the Cavs. Like, I remember we felt this way about kind of the ultra big lineups last year. It was like, yeah, a great team with a wealth of talent across the board shouldn't do this, but the Cavs should, because they don't always have a great option on the wing. I still think the minutes should be split by the matchup and circumstance. You know, I think Hartenstein should play when they need some rim protection, some high post passing, doing Hartenstein stuff. And, you know, and then if they want to go small, a little switchier, a little spacier, you play Wade, which means that they really do need Prince to step up on a night to night basis. They need Dally to continue playing way out, like out of his mind as a playmaker, which has been so fun as a kind of a forever Dally stand, that he's still able to impact the game with his jumper as broken as it is right now. He's still a net positive on offense for this team, which is just bananas.
Yeah. One thing I'll add to the Dally conversation is I don't know if Dally would be able to be this same net positive if he didn't return at the same time that Kevin Love did. Because
that's fair. That's a good point.
Having Kevin Love in the equation and Dean Wade playing significant minutes, it really it opens up that pick and pop game, and they have these off ball guys like Torian Prince and Isaac Okoro that Dally's able to find and capitalize on. If it was the previous situation where, let's say, Dally's rolling out there and you've got Allen and Nance and not as much spacing, I think you'd run into some of the issues where teams are just going to let him shoot. But I do think it's noteworthy that now that the Cavs have some spacing, you're seeing a little more wrinkles in the offense. Their offensive rating since Kevin Love has come back is 112.2, which is great. That's 6 games.
I didn't know that.
That's basically and this kind of goes to show you how much the league has inflated the stats right now and how much teams are scoring, but that's basically the same offensive rating the Cavs had in 2017, so that's something. Only a negative 1.1 net rating over those 6 games as well, so, you know, baby steps, progress, right?
Yeah, especially in a game where you gave up 87 points and a half, or in a stretch where you gave 87 points and a half, you'd think those numbers would be a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked them, but I will say this. I think JB, if you gave him Truth Serum, would love one of these wings to play so well in practice and in game that he can expand that wing and guard rotation one extra notch.
Yeah.
You know, Dylan's been hurt. Jetty's been pretty, you know, relegated to the bench. If one of those two could suddenly make it easier on him, I think that would probably be his preferred way to play. But with that said, those guys haven't been playing well or haven't been available. And I do think that, to your point, just play the guys who are playing well. And yeah. Dean Wade's one of those guys. Hartenstein's one of those guys. So you don't, as I said, you don't always have the luxury to play lineups that make sense or are conventional in an environment like this. But, you know, as long as the guys are playing well, then, you know, I think we'll deal with fit later and how it would work against a good team later.
Yeah, let's just put your most talented lineups out there. And I think your point about Prince coming off the bench was a good one. I think it's a tandem of things where, you wanted to get a little bit of a look of Dean Wade at the three, and you want to keep Prince in that role because he does bring that assertiveness. He can create his own shot, which is something that the bench just hasn't had, right? Like that was something when he was out, we were talking about, hey, they could really benefit from this. It brings another dimension to the table. So I think that's all kind of tied into it. And then there's going to be other situations where you're deciding whoever is coming off the bench kind of by matchup. Like I think certain matchups call for more Lamar Stevens, getting him some touches. Maybe you need a little more ball handling, so you go to Broderick Thomas. Like there's a lot of guys. This team I think part of it is as a result of all the injuries they dealt with. There's a lot of guys that are ready to contribute to that are coming off the bench that have contributed. And it's tricky because you want to give enough guys touches and give them the minutes that they deserve. But as this team gets healthier, those opportunities are going to become harder and harder to come by. And in one sense, it's very positive because these guys are going to be able to compete for minutes and whatnot. But especially when you don't have practices where those guys can't compete for those minutes in practice, it kind of sucks. Like it's not a great position to be in, but it's just kind of the reality of this season.
I think it stinks for the players, but it's the best possible news for the Cavs. I mean, agreed. The best situation would be it's a normal season. You have some practice time and guys can play their way back into a good spot. But the Cavs don't have that. The league does not have that. So all you want as a coach is to be able to say, this guy's playing terrible. Can I please put someone else in? And a lot of times JB hasn't had that option, you know, whether it's the kids just not being sharp or, you know, Jetty going through some struggles or Wendler going icy for a month at a time, you know, it's been like, well, I guess I got to keep playing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not something good teams have to deal with and healthy teams have to deal with. And, you know, that's why this is the best case if you're a Cavs fan is, you know what? Bummer for Dylan if he's out of the rotation for the rest of the year, you know, and that might be the case. It very well might be.
Especially if his health is kind of touch and go. Like at this point, and we talked about this before, but at this point, like, don't take any chances. Like the long-term health of this team is still the most important thing. I want to be competitive. I want to take advantage of these games because like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, and I thought it was a really smart point, you missed this stretch last year. And the fact that the schedule worked out in a way that they are playing almost exclusively teams that are in the playoff hunt that want to win games, they're going to be winnable games, but it's going to be against a team that's motivated. And that is the best possible situation when you're talking about player development. So there's going to be times.
I just had, can I butt in real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
It's funny. You just mentioned like, you know, a lot of teams in the hunt. And I was just kind of thinking about, it's dumb and obvious, but when you say it, it kind of, I think, it adds a little clarity. Because of the play-in, 20 teams minimum are in the playoff hunt.
Yeah.
You know, like, and really, when you look at the periphery, it's 22, 24. So almost every game is really in the playoff hunt. Like, there isn't a lot of tanking, which is why I love the play-in so much, is the incentive structures. And I've said this a billion times, like, I think this does more for avoiding tanking than flattened lottery odds ever could.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And, Jason, let me gather my thoughts again. The point I was going to make is that because there's so many back-to-backs and there's a lot of games still kind of remaining over the next month, there's going to be times where guys have to sit out, where they are a little banged up, and guys are going to have an opportunity to step up and earn more minutes there. Player of the Month nominee, Darius Garland, not active against the Pelicans. Did you take a second to look at what his numbers were? When I saw the report of Player of the Month, or Player of the Week, sorry, that he got the nomination, I was like, okay, I guess he got that spot. But when I actually took a step back and looked at it, 25.7 points, 6.7 assists, 54% from the floor, and 46% from three. Garland had himself a week.
He did.
He played pretty well. And you know what? Even that game against Toronto, like, most of the guys played really well. Like, that was a good offensive game for the Cavs. They scored 115 points. They just woke up a little too late. And that was...
I would like to note that you can't say the team played really well. They gave up 87 points. Offensively, they played pretty well.
I thought I clarified offensively, but my brain and mouth has betrayed me before. Speaking of which, apparently last week, this was pointed out on the Discord, but apparently last week I said, if you do fall to 7 or 8 in the draft, you can get a Sexton or Garland tier guy. I meant to say Sexton or Okoro tier, where coming into the draft, they were kind of considered those tier three prospects, which again speaks to how stupid some of the draft conversation is, because yeah, Colin Sexton was viewed as a tier three guy going in, but if you did a redraft, it's going to be a completely different conversation. If you did a redraft, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going second overall in that draft because he's probably playing the best out of any young guard in the NBA.
He's playing
right
so well, the Thunder are inventing reasons to keep him out of the off the floor.
In all fairness, I think that foot injury is pretty legit, but you never know, because they are just blatant tanking and they are playing with the basketball
god. Us in trouble. By the way, Billy in the chat just said you did clarify and then I'm gaslighting you. I'm sorry.
You
might get confused, but I'm a bad listener, so it's a tough combo.
You know what? That's very fair. The other thing from the weekend that I really want to talk about, and something that's a continued trend that I'm getting excited about now, is Isaac Okoro looking better. Because he is starting to look more and more assertive, and what he did against the Pelicans was incredibly encouraging. I like that he's starting to come to the ball a little more when he's playing off ball. There's less standing around, because there's still those possessions where it kind of looks like he doesn't want the basketball, where he's standing in the corner and he doesn't really feel like he can take advantage of the defender. So he's a little passive. But the fact that he got two offensive rebounds, found kind of those passing lanes off the ball, just more assertive play. The three-point jumper looked a lot better. The form looks a little quicker. There's not as much of a hitch. It actually looked a lot like his shots on the step back, where it's just that more natural motion.
This best is all step back three-point shooter that shoots like 30% from three in NBA history, says this unbiased observer.
You might be right, but man, it's getting exciting because you're starting to see those flashes with Okoro, which... Again, we didn't really expect a whole lot from him offensively year one, but now that you're starting to see a little bit of growth, seeing those flashes, it's reminding me of what we saw with Garland last year, where it was like, hey, the good that he does is noteworthy and something that's worth keeping an eye on, especially when you factor in the work ethic that Okoro has.
Yeah, and I've just been really, really happy to see, you know, the growth out of him as of late. And so much of, we talked about it last pod, but so much of what being a productive young player with kind of a limited skill set is situation. And that five out lineup, or I guess kind of four out if you include him, just allows him to thrive. You know, he's able to catch in rhythm. He's able to attack closeouts. He's able to back cut with a big who's actually really capable of finding him. He's able to leak out in transition for easy buckets. I just been really, really impressed with him. I mean, other than the 2-point stinker against the Raptors, we're on a run of 17, 11, 15, and 19, mm-hmm. all on efficient shooting from the field. Really, the OKC is the only one where he went 6 of 13, but still got 6 threes up, which I found encouraging. So, man, it's been really fun. You know, I will say I think if you are looking for reasons to think this is going to come back to earth. One, I mean, the three-point shooting is just a little bit inflated. I mean, he's not like shooting like 80% anymore, but like it's still a little inflated. And then
I think it's like 60% since Love came back.
Yeah. I think that when Jarrett returns, that's the everything's going to get a little harder for him, because if there's a player like Jarrett adds a lot to the offense, don't get me wrong, but you know, he does eat up space in the middle. Like he is a vertical spacer, not a 3-point spacer. And I think Isaac specifically is built to kind of take advantage of the latter, not yeah. the former.
But I think, you know, there's some merit ultimately, to that.
But ultimately, like, that's what's nice about the team getting healthy is you can put Isaac in lineups where he can use his skill set best, you know, because they're still going to play five out when Jarrett comes back.
Yeah.
There's no, like, I still think we're going to see plenty of Kevin Love, Dean Wade, because it's worked too well offensively to not do it. So, you know, I'm just really, really encouraged by kind of what we're seeing from him as of late, as a cutter, and as you're right, the three pointer is just looking much, much better. There were times midseason where he was just aiming it.
Like, yeah. It is very clear.
It was a trebuchet that he was trying to rain onto the enemy, and it was not looking good. And I do think it's looking a lot more compact, getting off quicker. And really, it's all about the footwork for him, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the step back looks good is he gets his base underneath him, and it's all one fluid motion.
Yeah, I think you might have a point there for sure. It's the fluid motion is what sticks out to me, but I think the base obviously plays a big part of that. I think it's really encouraging to see him play like this, because this is some of the flashes, right? This is what, when we started the season, I still don't buy into this, but a good friend of the podcast, Dave Dufour of The Athletic, did say that he thought Okoro had the highest ceiling out of anyone on the team. I can't go that high. I still have Garland ahead of him. But I mean,
that's because that is the correct take.
Yeah, I would imagine that is the correct take. As much as I love Dave, that just seems a little high. I'd love for it to be true. Don't get me wrong, because if Garland and Sexton are who I think they are, and Isaac Okoro is actually that kind of a player, and he develops into that kind of a player, that has significant implications for how this team building process is going. But seeing him play more confident is so huge to me. Carter, if you could pick one thing for Okoro to improve upon next season, what would it be? What would you add to his game if you had those experience points in like a my player to add to him?
It's the dribble. It's the handle. Mm-hmm. I think the handle is so limiting for him right now, because, you know, we're starting to see the above the rim stuff flash a little more. And, you know, I felt like this way with Colin, where I felt like Colin had all this physical tools. He was so fast, but he's never able to make a guy turn his hips, you know? Yeah. And NBA defenders are too long, too athletic for you. If you don't actually beat them, especially if you're not crazy long like Giannis, you're not going to get a clean look at the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we've seen with Colin this season, when you look compared to his rookie season, is he's able to get guys off balance way, way better using the handle, using his craft. And if Isaac gets that, then I think he is able to open up more angles, more room for him to be an above the rim finisher. Because as much as I like it when he's able to put English on the ball on the way up, I don't know if that's ever going to be like an elite. I don't think he's going to be an elite finisher that way. I think he's going to be an elite finisher by generating easy looks at the rim.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he has a road to being an elite finisher, I think it's that. So, you know, yes, the three-pointer I think is the most obvious answer, but I think in terms of ungunking the offense when he's out there, when there's not kind of perfect situation for him, it's all handle for me.
I think so too. And even watching him in transition, like, he does have these really explosive above the rim plays, like you mentioned, and they're becoming a little more frequent. But what I kind of get the sense of is, because he doesn't have confidence in his dribble and it's not as strong as it needs to be, sometimes he's picking it up a little too far away from the basket, right? Like, he's not getting to where he needs to go, and he's not taking off on balance. It's not as powerful as a jump as he's able to show in other instances. So by improving that dribble, I just think he's going to have better control of the basketball. It's going to keep him on balance more. And once he adds that, that's going to improve every single area of the game for him. And the other thing, which we talked about in our podcast with Rafa and Joe, was this is still his teenage body. Like, the fact that he is as jacked as it is right now, like, that's crazy. But he still has a lot of room to fill out. And when he adds more muscle and more strength to that frame, he's going to be really, really tough to contend with, because he is already making guys move off of where they want to be offensively, where they want to get their shots off. Sure, some of them are still hitting their shots. He's guarding the best player every single night, but he's making them take the jumpers in different spots than where they initially anticipated. He's making things harder for them. And there's countless examples this season of where he just puts the clamps on somebody and completely shuts their water off, where they are not able to even get a shot off or get a pass off. And it's that kind of stuff that makes you believe in his upside, that he can be a really high impact player, because guys that are that smart, that have the basketball IQ, they almost always turn into good players or guys that find a way into the lineup. And I thought against New Orleans, you saw some of the passing gifts that he has as well. And I think once that handle is improved and he can get where he wants to go on the floor, his skill set is going to catch up to his basketball IQ. And that's the number one thing. And with that work ethic, like, there's no real reason to believe he can't reach whatever his ceiling can be.
Yeah, and, you know, people in the chat, you know, someone just said, you know, Isaac doesn't need to grow. He's already strong. And Billy said, you know, Zion's the only one who out-muscled him.
More is more.
I get that.
More is more, baby.
Yeah, but more is more. You know, there's a difference between not being, like putting up a good fight and being a brick effing wall. You know, there was a stretch, you know, talking about man strength, like Zach Lowe always used to marvel about how, like, big dudes would try to post Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. And Lowry's big ass would just say no thank you and just wouldn't move an inch. Like, that is what we're talking about when we're talking about him adding strength. It's not as much that we feel that he's weak. It's that we feel that when he develops man strength on top of an already very strong and developed frame, he's going to be a tank in a really meaningful way. And that is going to be, that's really, really valuable, you know, like, that those are exceptional traits that, you know, differ him from any other, you know, defensive wing in the league. You know, you look at a guy like, just pulling a name out of a hat here, like Torrey Craig, like, really good defender, but mm-hmm. against big, strong dudes just gets kind of bowled over, you know, that's because he doesn't have the frame to hang. I think that's where Isaac has a real chance to be an elite defender
And he's still at that age where he might grow. Like, if he grows another inch or two and gets a little bit longer, oh my goodness.
Okoro Height Watch is coming.
Height Watch is coming back. It's coming. I'm so here for it. I need that. I need the one Instagram picture over the off season where he's standing next to someone that's, like, known to be 6'7", and we're just going to blow this thing up. We're going to dedicate an entire podcast to it. Do you know what his home shooting splits are now, Carter?
I'm sure they're bananas.
So for the season, so this is 24 games, Isaac Okoro is shooting 46% from the floor, 39.1% from three. He's got a true shooting percentage of 57.4.
That's, like, hilarious.
What the hell is happening, man? Like, that's encouraging. That's super encouraging. And this is why, when we talk about young players, and especially rookie contract guys, like, I hate it when people go off of their season averages, because with young guys, they're never their averages. They're always better or worse than the averages. How high
and they're
are
always
high
their better averages.
Yeah.
That make us feel good.
Yeah. When they're the Cavs, they're always their better averages.
Yeah.
They're, yeah. And when they're playing small minutes, they're always their purse 36 averages, like my boy Hardenstein. I will always find that good angle. Speaking of big Hardenstein,
our boy,
he is, I don't want to go too far in depth of, like, contract talk and whatnot, but with that player option and the way that he's playing right now,
he might opt out. This guy.
and obviously, like, I don't want to get into specifics, because that's just a weird territory to get into. But when it comes to a guy like Hardenstein, I wouldn't mind locking him up. Like, I wouldn't mind working out a little extension. I can't imagine that it would be a considerable amount of money that really factors into team building. But that's a guy that, like, he fits. what he's provided in this stretch is super encouraging. Obviously, not the best night against New Orleans fouling out, but he's someone that fits what they do really well, and I wouldn't mind throwing like a 3-4 year contract, because I just don't see a better option being available on the free agent market. And at the same time, like, I feel there's an edge when you are the team that finally gives a guy his first look, that gives him an opportunity where he knows he fits and it's going to be a good display of his skill set. I feel like there's a good partnership there from both sides, and I'd be encouraged if he ultimately sticks around and works out a smaller contract with the Cavs over the next couple of years.
Well, this is what smart teams do. You look at OKC locking up Moses Brown, locking up Lou Dort on really, really, I mean, you're not getting a team-friendly deal like that, probably.
Right.
Because those are converted two-way deals,
mm-hmm.
where you're really offering some security. But, you know, I think smart teams do this, is they take low-risk, long-term bets because, sure, because ideally you do kind of what they, you know, and they took a swing like this on Jetty, where it was like,
yeah,
it's not crazy money, it's long-term, and, you know, you're hoping that it becomes a huge value play, and if it doesn't, you're not on the hook for like 30, 40 million or something, you know, right. Like it's a max. You know, I think it's a smart play here. Because, like, you know, no matter how rough of a season Jetty's had, which is, it's been a real up and down year for him, I don't see a lot of, like, belly aching about the deal.
No.
You know, I think mostly people
are like, it's more about his play, right?
Yeah, like, the play has been, you know, inconsistent to be nice. But, you know, like, the deal is pretty smart. It's a descend, you know, you look at the way it's reported to be, it's a descending structure, it's a long deal, it's term. They did this with Alphonso McKinney before they ended up moving him in the JaVale trade, and I just think these kind of deals are what smart teams do. So I, you know, I hope that Kobe Altman and crew are thinking like that. I think it would make a lot of sense to try to chase Hartenstein on, you know, 3-4 year deal,
yeah.
where you're not offering a ton of money, but you're offering a ton of years, and you know that does add up for a young player who hasn't.
Security's quite huge.
Security means a lot to a Hartenstein in a way that it doesn't to a LeBron, you know. So I think the Cavs would be wise to take those kind of bets, because ultimately, until you're making, you know, in the $10 million a year range, I do think it's kind of marginal, the difference, you know, structurally in terms of kind of where you are operating as a team.
Right. No, I completely agree. And one thing, I didn't actually anticipate talking about this today, but you kind of refresh my memory to take them and thinking about, because obviously there is a looming possibility of a Colin Sexton extension this summer. And while a lot of people are going to argue the merits of it one way or another, something that kind of has been in my mind is, I don't really worry about that when it comes to the Cavs, because one, ownership has shown year after year they are willing to pay. They are willing to pay for talent, to keep talent. We're not going to lose talent because of any one signing. The other thing is, obviously, Sexton is someone that works his butt off, that he's always getting better every single game. But this team has also shown that without cap flexibility, without real assets over the last couple of years, they've always found new ways and creative ways to add talent, to maneuver, to make improvements to the roster without having that as an option, without having that cap space. So the fact that they have navigated that so well and found ways to add guys, to add assets, it makes me not really worry about, well, how much cap flexibility do they have? Because if you have a front office that works well with other teams making deals to kind of find creative ways to improve your roster, you're going to be able to sustain success and to make adjustments if you need to. So I don't really worry about rewarding young guys that play well in this situation, because that's what you want to do. You want to be a team that's loyal, that rewards people that work hard, that buy into the team concept. And guys like Colin Sexton and to much, much lesser extent Hartenstein, they kind of fit the culture. They fit the template of what this team is trying to build. And I think that kind of play should be rewarded.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I think so. Let's do the, you know, let's do the intellectual exercise of what this team looks like if they didn't decide to make the choices they made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the number one being the Kevin Love deal, which I think has been it's been disappointing just in terms of the availability of the injuries,
yeah,
et cetera. You know, they might have been able to buy an extra first, maybe an extra first or two. You know, you look at what Sam Presti's done, but you kind of forget that the whole OKC asset hoard doesn't work if the Rockets don't mess up and give two firsts with Chris Paul.
Yeah.
For Russ Westbrook.
Yeah, OKC managed to add picks while upgrading a roster position and then flip that upgrade
for more picks.
And flip Paul George for decades worth of picks. Like, that's not the same situation. We didn't flip LeBron for a decade of picks.
No.
We would have been killed for that.
Yes. So, like, ultimately, you know, I think they might have been able to buy a couple, maybe a first or two, you know, because there have been picks for sale for just taking on dead money.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they might have been able to do that. But, you know, I think they've bought assets in creative ways. They traded Alphonso McKinney and Jordan Bell for JaVale McGee in 3 second-round picks and perhaps their backup center in the future in Hartenstein.
Yeah.
They took on... what was considered to be a toxic salary in Torian Prince and said, for the price, we'll take Jared Allen, our center of the future. So I think they're still operating as a team that will take on what other teams consider to be bad assets mm-hmm. for positive value.
And even though Kevin Love hasn't been available as much as we'd want, I'm going to take Colin Sexton at his word when he says how important Kevin Love has been to his development. Like, Sexton obviously has that work ethic, but you have to have the right people in place to help channel that work ethic, to put it into the right areas. And Kevin Love obviously has been that kind of a guy for him, someone that he calls up after games to review plays, talks to him in the timeouts and things like that. Like, I think it's really easy to undersell that, because there's no tangible way to put like a dollar value or a PER or RPM on something like that. But those type of things really do make a big difference.
Yeah. And ultimately, this is why I think we're both on kind of team like, let's just keep building in a some kind of linear fashion towards where we're going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will understand if they don't end up paying Colin. I think I'll disagree. At least as of right now, I think I would disagree with that.
Interesting. Okay.
But I do, again, feel that, and I think you feel the same way, which is...
And to clarify, you mean wait until he's a restricted free agent, yes. Not give an extension this summer, not pay him altogether. We aren't locked on Cavs here.
Yeah. I think I'm out, by the way, on any extension this summer, because I, for one, feel like that negotiation starts at the top, and I just don't think that's good asset management. You know, I think that this is a player who you can burn till, you know, you can just wait until he hits RFA. And
okay, so you're kind of contradicting yourself, because I'm saying, phrased it.
I'm saying I disagree with not paying him. I think eventually they should pay him.
Okay, now I understand what
eventually you're they should pay him. In my opinion. You know, at least I think that's the right direction for the team, just because I don't want to burn somebody for nothing. You know, I don't see how that helps. And I think Kobe Altman's proved that he can operate over the cap just fine.
Yeah.
He can go find assets just fine. But I do feel very strongly that you don't need to do it this summer unless he's coming to you and his reps are coming to you and saying, hey, you know, let's compromise. Let's meet in the middle here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if something like that's available, you jump all over it.
But if his agents are saying, hey, we want the max, you know, the rookie max, whatever you can give, you know, whenever you're ready, I'll wait and let the team continue to decide who it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because we got cheated out of a half season of this, but ultimately I do kind of want to keep him around because as we've said, I don't think that their team building fundamentally gets better with that extra flexibility. Cause by the way, there's not that much extra flexibility unless they also don't pay Jared Allen, which would be a really, like
wild
idea. So, you know, I just don't get the upside. So I think the number is going to scare people. I think casuals eventually will kind of, you know, frankly lose their mind if the team goes through a bad stretch and he's making a rookie max. But as we've seen over and over again, Jamal Murray, players Donovan like Mitchell. That Donovan Mitchell, paying guys before they've earned it is kind of the game, because you hope that by the time they're in the middle of that extension, they're superstars.
Yep. And you know what?
Which, like, by the way, in Denver, they found one.
Yep.
He's really, really good.
And to me, that's why, like, when you're doing the thought exercise of, okay, it's probably a little better to wait till a restricted free agency. But at the same time, like, when you do have a guy that has that kind of a work ethic that fits into the culture, sometimes you want to reward that. Sometimes you want to set the tone of, hey, you do the right things. You continue to buy into what we've been trying to build. You've been through all this adversity of multiple coaching changes, like instability all around at times. Like, sometimes you need to reward that. So for me, like, I wouldn't, like, freak out at an extension this summer. Like, I think it's going to happen one way or another. If you wait until the following summer, my guess is Colin Sexton's going to do what he's done his entire career, which is improve by a considerable margin in multiple ways over the summer, and you're going to be paying him that anyway. So to me, it doesn't, like, it's going to kick in a year later anyway. So it's not a huge concern for me, but this is the interesting team building stuff, right? Like, it comes down to the human element. When do you want to reward guys? Who do you want to prioritize? And the Cavs are fortunate that they're in a situation where I don't think that they're ever going to be losing talent as a result of money being an issue. Like, that is one of the really fortunate things that we have to kind of hang our hat on.
Markets don't have that. A lot of small markets do not have that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I will say they shouldn't just blank check. You know, we've seen where that can go really wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're really in that zone where, you know, I don't think that they're looking to pay, you know, a bridge player. You know, I hope that we're not going to see another, you know, summer of Earl Clark and Jarrett Jack, you know, where it was like, these vets that were meant to kind of bridge to success. Like, I think the reason that as I said earlier in the pod,
I think this is the year. I think this past year, this year that we're currently in, I think this was the bridge year where they were trying to bring in vets like JaVale McGee to help these guys come further along. Because I think next season, like, we're seeing it even with Kevin Love now. Like, if Kevin Love was as healthy as he was last season, and with the growth of the young core, like, I think it's going to be really hard for this team not to be in the play-in next year. So I don't think you're going to see that, because I think we're already going through that. I think this has already been our year three experiment from last time around.
And as I said, ultimately, even if they go, you know, spend the full mid-level or something like that in free agency, I do think at a macro level, the reason the team will be good or bad next season, especially the first half of next season, will be driven by the top six or seven guys on the roster right now.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, I hope that they continue to just, which is why, again, to take this full circle from the front of the pod, it's why it's so important that they play this the end of the season out with some vigor and figure out exactly kind of what they got in the tank going into this offseason.
Completely agree, man. And I can't wait to see it. Cavs playing next on Wednesday in
Charlotte. Stay healthy.
Yes, yes. Hopefully they will be healthy. I have a good feeling. I got the good juju going about Wednesday. I feel like we might get over two total minutes of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Love, and Allen, which is all they've played this season to this point, which is still just
a low bar.
We are going to build up on those minutes, and we are going to build for the rest of this season. Next podcast should be Thursday. We don't have a time lockdown just yet, but we're going to talk a little bit about some draft prospects as well as what's going on. So make sure you guys are checking that out.
A little pregame pod.
If you guys are watching right now on YouTube, make sure that you like and subscribe. Makes a big difference, plays with those algorithms, and gives us the support that we really need. If you're listening on a podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of a review on any platform, any support you're giving us, and send that to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.